Welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. Well, I went into this conversation today with a healthy dose of skepticism. Not so much about hypnosis itself, I've talked about that before, but about just how much one approach can reasonably claim to help. And then Craig started talking about the subconscious mind as a kind of filing cabinet, storing experiences and creating instructions designed to keep us safe. Sometimes those instructions were written when we were 8 or 12 or 20, and we're still following them at 60 or 70. That got my attention. Because this conversation became much less about hypnosis and much more about the beliefs we carry, regrets, old hurts, roads not taken, and those things we've decided quietly are simply who I am. Craig also tells a wonderful story about a woman and a piano that may have you wondering, as it did me, what you've accepted as truth about yourself simply because you've believed it for a very long time. So, whether you're intrigued by hypnotherapy, skeptical about it, or couldn't care less about hypnosis, there's something bigger here worth considering. Are we ever really too old to change? Let's find out. Listen now to my conversation with Craig Merriweather. Have you ever caught yourself saying, "Well, this is just who I am now," or "I'm too old to change"? Many of us carry old stories about ourselves, stories shaped by childhood, relationships, careers, disappointments, and life experiences. Sometimes those stories serve us well, and sometimes they quietly hold us back without us even realizing it. Today's guest is a subconscious transformation expert, clinical hypnotherapist, and medical hypnosis specialist who spent years helping people understand how the subconscious mind influences the way we think, react, and move through life. Whether you're curious about hypnosis or simply wondering if it's ever too late to change, I think you'll find this conversation fascinating. Craig Merriweather, welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast, where we are embracing the journey.
Agnes, I really appreciate you inviting me on. I've been looking forward to this, so I'm ready to get going. We're going to have a very deep conversation, I think, and a lot of rabbit holes to go down in terms of mind and change and transformation. So.
Right. Okay, let's start at the beginning. You're a subconscious transformation specialist. What exactly is the subconscious, and how much influence does it really have on our everyday lives?
Sure. Nowadays, I think the terms conscious and subconscious mind are a little bit out of favor, and I think it seems that people writing and researching are just calling it mind. But just for the sake of our conversation here, the subconscious mind, that's that part of mind that's running your digestive system, running your immune system, beating your heart. You get a cut on the finger, you don't have to think about that. If somebody is out in Alaska skiing and they break their leg, yes, they're going to go to the doctor, get an x-ray, have a cast on, but it's not the cast that's healing the leg. Subconscious mind is sending that emergency first aid to heal the leg and fuse the leg, and it knows it's the left leg, not the right arm. Same with the finger. You get a cut on your finger, it knows it's the index finger of your left hand, not the pinky finger of your right hand. If you ever had that experience of, someone points to your arm and say, "Hey, how'd you get that big scrape on your arm?" You're like, "I don't know. What scrape is that?" It's like your subconscious mind knew there was a problem and started the healing process of scab and new skin, and before you were even consciously aware that there was a problem. And so it's running all these systems, things we don't have to think about, beating your heart and breathing your lungs and taking a day-old baby to that of an adult, things we don't have to think about. It's all behind that curtain of the subconscious mind. And it's also holding on to habits, things like walking. You don't have to think about walking. You did when you were a little kid, when you were learning and training yourself to walk, just like you train yourself for martial arts or to learn how to play the piano. But it's once you've kind of wired your brain for these new behaviors and actions, your subconscious mind takes it over. It becomes automatic and you don't have to think about it anymore. So it's doing those things in the background of the conscious of your conscious awareness, but its main job is to keep you safe and protected. And the main way it does this is by the issues, circumstances, situations, and events that you've gone through in life. So it sets up these safety protocols around your past hurt and pain, around the trauma. It's learning, sort of like AI. And once again, technology kind of mimicking what we do as human beings. It's learning through the information that it's been given throughout life, maybe since you were a little kid. And so, like files in a filing cabinet, we have all these incidents that have happened in our life. And we sense our safety and our comfort in the world due to these situations, circumstances, and events that have happened in our life. Maybe they've been very joyful and happy. Maybe they've been very traumatic. Probably more than likely a mix of all of that. And as we go through life, as we go through our day, what we see, hear, taste, touch, and smell, as we go through our day and gather all that information, our brain processes it and the mind kind of filters it through that filing cabinet. If anything registers as one of those old files, or maybe a new file of danger, of trauma, of tragedy, it'll send us the warning signals. Just like somebody pulling the fire alarm in a building, it will send us those warning signals, but instead of sirens and lights, so we'll get feeling state. The feeling state of anxiety, the feeling state of fear, feeling state of anger, overwhelm, is a warning us that there's danger and we need to get to safety. Well, the kind of issue of being a human being and of the human mind is that the mind can't tell the difference between what's real and what's imagined. And this is most noticeable when somebody's dreaming at night. It could be a very romantic, sexy dream, but it can also be a very traumatic, frightful dream, a nightmare. And the nightmare may be something very, very realistic, maybe a veteran having a PTSD dream about being back in combat on the front lines, even though their war was 40 years ago. It might be something super ridiculous, like a cheeseburger is chasing down the street, throwing coconuts at your head. Both situations, a person is safe and sound in bed, sleeping in bed, but the mind thinks they're in danger and it has this shoot first, ask questions later protocol. And it'll start turning on the stress response, even in deep sleep. Brain starts creating adrenaline and cortisol, dumping it into your bloodstream. Your heart starts racing, gets to the big muscles of your arms and to your legs to fight or to escape. Powering your immune system, your digestive system starts to turn down because that energy needs to get to your big muscles to help protect you. You're breathing shallowly to get that quick oxygen. And so much cortisol dumped into your brain, it wants you awake, consciously aware of your surroundings, looking for that cheeseburger that's about to attack you. So you can imagine what's happening in your waking world. And so that subconscious mind is a very emotionalized part of mind that's there, once again, to keep you safe and protected, which doesn't necessarily mean happy and successful. It means safe, protected. It's your survival. It wants you alive. And so it's a very emotionalized part of mind using kind of computer code that has been entered over the months, years, decades, maybe since you were a little kid. The conscious level of mind, that's your when you're in this conscious awareness of the present moment. It's the logical part of mind, the analytical part of mind. It's that part of mind that creates your goals and the plans to achieve those goals, your plans for your day, the plans for your week, your 5-year plan. It's part of mind that has the willpower and sets up your willpower to focus on those plans to achieve your goals. Well, what neuroscience has told us in the past is that conscious mind only makes up 5% of mind. Subconscious mind makes up 95% of mind. So when there's conflict between the logical mind and the emotional mind wins every time. And that's why none of this has to ever make any sense, because that subconscious mind is gaining information and storing it to keep you safe and protected. And maybe the best thing as a child to keep yourself safe in a very unsafe situation, maybe at home, maybe at school, maybe somewhere else, maybe just in an instant, maybe over years. But maybe the best thing the child could have done was to hide and keep themselves small and to keep quiet. That may have been the best thing to do to keep safe. But that's not going to work in your 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s and 70s. But until the instructions change, nothing's going to change. It doesn't matter, again, how illogical it may be that you're still using the instructions to keep yourself safe that were set up when you were 8 years old, when you're now 58 years old. So What's fascinating about this, and this isn't, of course, to blame a child or to blame an adult. I'm not blaming the victim. It wasn't your fault. It wasn't fair. It shouldn't have happened if somebody has gone through a very traumatic event or an embarrassing event or humiliating event, an event that caused anger or fear. Shouldn't have happened. But you're the one who put those instructions in that subconscious mind to keep yourself safe. If you're the one who did that, that becomes very empowering because that means, well, then you can change it. And he tells me our brains are constantly changing. That's why they tell us as we're getting older, learn stuff, learn a new language, learn chess, learn dance, learn, do crossword puzzles, whatever the thing is. Travel, learn, be of interest, and do new things because it's creating new neural pathways in the brain. It's keeping the brain working and operating. All right, so let's learn new things. Let's learn new behaviors. Because this isn't like learning how to do crossword puzzles or learning chess or learning a new language or whatever the thing is, learning bridge or poker or whatever the game is. Isn't that learning something, learning new behaviors, learning new actions? All right, so let's learn new behaviors, learn new actions, which will then transform mindset, which will then transform your emotional state as you move through your life, through the world.
So can I go back to the
Sure.
whole programming? Where does perception come into this? Because what if I go through an experience and my perception of it is not accurate?
Yeah. There's a lot of that in life, and especially memory. Memory can be very faulty because we change and manipulate memories whenever we think about them, whether it's the wedding or the vacation, whether it was last month or 60 years ago. Whenever you think of a memory, you're changing it slightly by adding on to whatever you're experiencing in life in the moment. And that's why eyewitness testimony may not be held in high regard in terms of evidence and court, especially cold cases that are 25, 30 years old, if not more. People, tell me what the car that you saw driving down the street. Well, that was 20 years ago. I guess it was like that. Yeah, your memory's kind of faulty. In fact, one memory expert said that the only way to keep a memory pure is to never think of it. And so we're changing things. And so that, again, can become very empowering because if you have the ability to change your perception of things, and it's not to create amnesia or it's not to create forgetfulness of something. Certainly you want to remember a hot pot on a stove will burn your hand. That's wisdom. But you don't need to keep the hurt and pain anymore. And since we know that that is under our control to a certain extent, perception of event again can be changed. And so you don't want to create, a falseness or trickery or fakery around it. But in terms of healing emotional wounds, it can become very helpful to understand that you are in control of that. And that's what hypnotherapy is all about. It's not taking away control. It's not mind control or brainwashing or, turning people into zombies or Manchurian candidates to go assassinate a prime minister. It's about you taking back control. So lots of people come to sessions and they're like, I just feel anxious all the time. I feel afraid. I feel angry at the drop of a hat. It's like, well, you're already out of control. So let's give you back that control. In terms of perceptions, a great example of this, when I was in school, I went to the Hypnotherapy Academy of America, a great school, extraordinary school, 500 hours of training just in therapeutic hypnosis and techniques around medical hypnosis. And it's a real school. You go to this school and you sit in a classroom with other people, 25, 30 other people. And it's 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., Monday through Friday, for 2.5 months, so 10 weeks. And it's 500 hours of training, and you're doing weekend work because, you're in a town that you don't know and you don't know anybody. So let's do study groups and work together and practice. So you're constantly practicing or working with each other. And, you'll sit in a classroom and hear a lecture about the scientific validity of this new technique you're about to learn about. Maybe you'll see a demonstration up in front of class, and then you break them into small groups with the coach and you practice with each other. Well, one of the people that got up during one of the practices, one of the techniques about trauma and healing with issues from the past, was a woman. She was an older woman. She was in her 60s and she'd retired and she was looking for something just kind of in the next phase of life and just wanted to become a hypnotherapist. And so she was training as this was going to be her retirement thing to do. And she was a volunteer who got up. And one of the issues was that she loved playing piano. She was great at playing piano, but she never played in front of people. And she had made her really sad and because she wanted to play for her grandchildren and at parties. And she didn't want to be a concert pianist or go to play in bars or anything, but she just wanted to play for people. And she wouldn't do it because when she was a little kid and learning and taking lessons, she heard her piano teacher tell her parents while she was in the other room. But she overheard the piano teacher tell her parents that she couldn't teach her anymore because, she was so bad. She's terrible. Her older sister, she could continue teaching. And so she was so kind of humiliated and discouraged that she stopped playing. I mean, she kind of playing her own here and there. And it was disappointing to her because she loved playing the piano. Well, she was doing this work to kind of release and let go of that so she could finally maybe get the confidence to play for her grandchildren, play for, Thanksgiving parties and Christmas and things like that. And she tapped into that old memory and expanded it to remember the entire conversation. And what the piano teacher had said was, she is so good that I can't teach her anymore. I've taught her everything I know. I can teach the older sister because, she's not so good. And I still can teach her some things, but she needs to find a new teacher, maybe somebody at the university. But her mind had cut that part of the conversation out. And her little kid mind of, I don't know, whatever, 12, 13 years old, only heard the part of, I can't teach her anymore. So that must mean that I'm no good. And she held on to that for some 50 years. And was a disappointment in life because that was 50 years of her not playing piano. And so now, even if that was that true or not true, the people involved probably aren't around anymore if she's in her 60s, or if they are, they probably certainly don't remember that one conversation 50 years ago. Maybe the parents would say, "Oh yeah, we're supposed to take you to some other piano teacher, but you just didn't want to play piano anymore." And so, even if that was not a real memory, I guess, the subconscious mind speaks to us in symbolism, and metaphor, dreams, and imagination. Sigmund Freud said that. Carl Jung said that. Milton Erickson said that. Laura Perls, who helped develop Gestalt therapy, said that. The subconscious mind speaks to us in symbolism and metaphor and dreams and imagination, and we can speak back to it in metaphor and symbolism. And that's why we can allow you to walk down a beautiful beach and get to a waterfall with blue healing energy that washes away all the stress and tension, not on the outside, but on the inside. It's moving through. Is there a real blue healing waterfall? No. But you can imagine. And just like the nightmare of the cheeseburger chasing on the street, you can change your physiology. Well, in that case, maybe, and this would be an interesting conversation over a cup of coffee or a glass of wine or something, maybe the subconscious mind created, quote unquote, that memory in that way so that she could finally have the healing she was looking for. Maybe that was an exact reenactment of the memory, and she got it pretty well accurate. I don't know. So what's important is the healing. And that's why we don't want to go looking for memories. I've had people just like, I'm just always uptight. I'm resentful. I'm angry at my family. I don't know why. I think something happened when I was a kid. I can't remember anything before the age of 10. I want to go looking for the abuse that happened in my life. Absolutely not. I will not do that. Because if the instruction to the subconscious mind is to find a traumatic memory of abuse from your family and it's not there, it'll make one up. Because it's computer code. You're asking it to do something. And since memories are faulty anyway, doesn't mean it didn't happen, but it's just what we want to work on is the feeling state of resentment and anger, maybe towards specific people. We want to specifically go back to, and maybe it's important to find core issues, but we're going to start with feeling states, not just, dip a fishing net into the pool of the subconscious mind and hope we dredge up tragedy so we can heal it. We start with the feeling state because the feeling state is created by brain chemistry, Maybe adrenaline and cortisol to create stress and anger and fear. Maybe oxytocin, serotonin, and dopamine to create happiness and joy. But in terms of like these warning signals we get, maybe around people or work or other relationships or whatever it may be, news of the world, these warning signals of fear and anxiety is created by brain chemistry changing. And the way brain chemistry is changing in this way is through a thought, conscious or unconscious. So that feeling is directly connected to the thought, conscious or unconscious, that is creating it. Therefore, you know why it's happening. Doesn't necessarily mean the memory of the situation is precisely accurate. Very well, maybe lots of trauma in life. So let's deal with the emotional component of it, resolve it in a way that is healing for you. Now, how do you resolve it? You know what to do. And that may, it's very obnoxious to tell somebody that who's been struggling potentially for decades, but it's your subconscious mind. Your subconscious mind is creating this alarm system, this warning system, and you are powerful enough to know what to do to heal, whether it's a cut on the finger, a broken leg, scrape on the arm, or, emotional and mindset healing as well. And that's where hypnotherapy comes in, is to help you do that. I don't fix anybody. And hypnotherapy in and of itself doesn't fix anybody. You fix yourself. Just as a hammer does not build the cathedral. You can use a hammer to build a cathedral. And same with this. Hypnotherapy doesn't do the healing. You use these tools to heal yourself. And the hypnotherapist is there to help guide and facilitate and specifically on these specifically targeted issues, of which you may not even know what they are. You just know somebody may say, I'm just anxious all the time. I don't know why. You know why. And again, I know that's obnoxious to hear, especially if you've been struggling for a long time. You've been to talk therapy and you've been to EDMR and you've been to all these things. I know that's obnoxious to hear. But I'm going to guess, even if you're pretty chronically anxious, if somebody's chronically anxious, you're not anxious all the time. You're not anxious probably 16, 17, 18 hours a day, every day. There are points in the day when you are not anxious. Maybe it's just late at night. Finally, the day is over and you're watching your favorite show. Or maybe you're playing a game online. Or maybe you're having lunch with a friend. Or maybe you're working out in the morning or whatever the thing is. There's a point in your day when you are not anxious. So your subconscious mind knows when to turn it on and when to turn it off. Well, it knows what it's doing. And again, the frustration is that you're using that 5% conscious mind to try to analyze logically the emotionalized traumatic files behind the veil of the unconscious. Well, let's quiet down that conscious level of mind and let's just ask. Maybe it's just as easy to ask. What's the problem? Okay, there's the problem. Maybe the problem happened 60 years ago when you were a little kid. What do you need to do about it? Well, that kid needs love and needs attention. Okay, give the child love and attention. Mind can't tell the difference between what's real and what's imagined. So by putting the child out in front of you and giving it the love and the attention and the support and the encouragement and the courage and the bravery and the confidence, and then have it move forward over that timeline of some 60 years. It's like a domino, it's like a house of cards falling. And again, it's not to say it's your fault or blame anybody. Certainly wasn't fair, but you're the one who put those instructions on how to keep yourself safe in there. Maybe as a frightened child unconsciously during a traumatic event, but you're the one who put them in there. So that means you're the one who can change them. And that becomes very empowering. And that's why this doesn't have to take a long time.
Okay, so you've said that you, as the therapist, can't fix anybody. Are you like a guide or a safety net?
That's a great way of saying it. I'm guiding people through this healing. You can do this on your own. There's certainly plenty of recordings online. You find recordings of Milton Erickson online. And all these people from the 50s and 60s, there's certainly probably hundreds of thousands, if not more, recordings of therapeutic hypnosis for all sorts of different things. I've found people who have hundreds of recordings on their own website. on all sorts of different things. So you can use these generalized recordings, and they may, deal with the issue you want to deal with. But working with someone specifically is it's like the difference of working with a personal trainer at the gym or just going to the gym. What working with a therapeutic, working in therapeutic hypnosis and working with somebody who has been trained is they help facilitate and guide you through that healing and of all the issues that might come up during that process, during the appointment. And because, there's some curveballs that get thrown, and sometimes you think you're going straight, and all of a sudden there's a left-hand turn or a right-hand, So that's where the training comes in. I've worked with people who thought, oh, I just want to have confidence to give the speech at the big conference coming up next month, and all of a sudden we're dealing with some heavy stuff that came up because the subconscious mind decided, well, we can work on a issue, but why not work on the issue? Because it felt safe and comfortable. And so the training comes, it's like, well, okay, here's what we need to do now in terms of healing that. So it's like the safety net is lifeguarding a situation. And because in a certain sense, because it's subconscious mind is huge. And so there's a bit of a dance to it, a bit of jazz to it in terms of what pathway is going to be walked down. I've worked with people who told me I was doing some I live in Flagstaff, Arizona. I do most of my sessions over Zoom nowadays, just not like this. Since the kind of COVID era, and not just me, of course, there's talk therapists and life coaching and relationship counseling and doctor's appointments. We all went to Zoom, and the reason why we continue this is one, it's super convenient, and even what the research shows, the sociological research has come out over the last few years, is that Zoom sessions in these therapeutic settings, Zoom sessions work as well as in person, and there's some research that shows that Zoom sessions work better than in person. And that's because people feel relaxed and comfortable in their homes. They feel safe in their homes. They don't have to go across town. When they're done with the appointment, they're at home. And so it's very convenient. I certainly understand people wanting to do in person. I see people in person in Flagstaff, if anybody happens to be driving through to the Grand Canyon or Sedona or somewhere, but doing Route 66. But in terms of this work, I was doing some classes for the Cancer Support Community of Arizona online, doing Zoom classes. And, it's like 12, 15 people. And we're doing a series of four or five classes on like pain control and healing acceleration and immune system boosting, that kind of thing. And this woman who's a bit older, she's in her mid-70s, I would guess. She had been to two classes and, was at the third Zoom class, and she was early, and so we were chit-chatting like one does when you're waiting for class to start. You talk about the weather and weekend plans and that kind of chit-chat. And she asks, "Does hypnotherapy work with procrastination?" I said, "Well, yeah, that's a mindset issue. You're putting on the brakes for something that actually could be very positive and very beneficial, getting the report done on time, getting the homework done on time, going after the promotion or, whatever the thing is. Procrastination is a defense mechanism. You know why you're doing it because you're only procrastinating in certain areas of life. And so you know why you're doing it. You know which brakes to put on. And hypnotherapy can be very helpful in identifying and then, changing that programming, resolving the issue." So we set up an appointment for the very next day because I had the same time period open. Just have to be open on the calendar. And so we set up with the appointment. 24 hours later, she shows up for this Zoom session and she says, "I know I told you I wanted to work on procrastination, but what I really want to work on is why I don't matter in life." And this is a 70-year-old woman who thinks she has no value, doesn't have any worth, doesn't matter in life. So that's heavy. And there's a feeling state to that. When you feel that you don't matter, when you feel you don't have worth, you feel that in the body. There's that famous book, The Body Keeps the Score. You feel that in your body. That feeling state in the body is created by brain chemistry. You change brain chemistry in that way by a thought, conscious or unconscious. So we can follow that feeling state back to the thought that has created us. That's what we did. Go back to the first time we did some regression work. Go back to the first time you ever felt not being worthy. Go back to the first time you didn't feel that you mattered in life. So we're doing this regression work, and I do the countdown, 10 down to 1, and by 1, your subconscious mind will show you in a safe and gentle way the first time you ever felt that you didn't matter. Maybe up on a movie screen, or maybe just the knowledge will be downloaded into your more conscious awareness. 10 down to 1, and 1, I'm like, okay, now where are you? And she says, I'm standing up in my crib, and my father's screaming at me because I won't stop crying. Now, I don't know what standing up your crib is. That's like 12 months old, 14 months old, maybe somewhere around there. And, if she's 70 years old, this is probably the 1950s. Maybe men back then weren't exactly trained on how to deal with little kids. And maybe mom's out of the house and dad's having a bad day, a bad week, a bad life. Maybe dad's just not a very nice person. And the baby's crying. He doesn't know what to do. And so the only thing that comes to mind in his frustration is just holler louder than the baby and tell the baby to shut up. And in that instant, that child having to justify why this is happening, because here's this person supposed to love her and protect her, keep her safe and nurture her. This person's yelling at her, screaming at her. In that instance, what got downloaded as safety instructions was, well, I guess I don't matter in life. And I need to keep myself small. I need to keep hidden because I don't have any worth or value. Now, is that true? Absolutely not. But that in that instant, in that child, came out those instructions. And she finally, after some 70 years of holding on to that heaviness, decided it was time to release and let it go. And she did. And I never saw her again. That was it. We did three generalized sessions of classes with, 12, 14 other people. We did one personalized session. So she had kind of practiced moving her nervous system into that more relaxed state of the parasympathetic nervous system. We did one specified healing session on this issue, this heavy, deep issue that she needed to resolve. And that was it. That's the work she needed to do. Now, I'm not saying everything's that simple and easy or a one and done or that kind of thing, but it shows you the power of this. Now, of course, I reach out and make sure people are doing well and emailed back and forth for about a year, just every few months, just checking up and doing great. And so,
Can I,
yeah, absolutely.
sorry, can I go to hypnosis just specifically for a moment? Because, we all watch those TV shows in the 60s where somebody on a stage would have people clucking like chickens, that sort of thing. So can you tell us what is hypnosis and better still, what it isn't?
Absolutely. And yeah, not just the 60s. I mean, you can go to Las Vegas. There's at least probably four or five of those hypnotist shows. You can go to comedy clubs. There's tours of it. That's where you can make some decent money, is doing those shows and the entertainment side of it. But here's the thing with hypnosis, and specifically maybe hypnotherapy, is that again, this isn't control. It's not mind control. It's not brainwashing. It's not turning people into Manchurian candidates to go rob the bank or whatever the thing is. It's giving you back control. And the state of hypnosis is just brainwave state. Now, the famous ones we learned about back in school are beta, alpha, theta, and delta. And it's basically just how fast your brain is processing information. So maybe you've seen like in a biology film or a, kind of documentary about neuroscience or something. You've seen the lightning storm happening in their brain when somebody like walks down the street or they think a thought or feel an emotion. All the neurons, the brain cells related to that activity are firing little electrical pulses. So it looks like this lightning storm's happening in the brain. Well, how fast that lightning storm, that electrical storm happens in the brain determines what brainwave state you're in. Now, when you're in the present moment, conscious awareness focused on the task at hand, you're in the beta brainwave state, firing about 18, 20 cycles per second. That's probably what you and I are in, Agnes, right now. Firing about 20 cycles per second, listening, asking questions, having a conversation. But let's say I'm back in high school math class. And I don't mean to pick on high school math teachers, but let's say I'm back, that's just a class I didn't do well in. So we're back in high school math class. And I got to do well because it's going to be on the final, and I'm not doing well in this class, and I got to get a decent grade. So I'm taking notes, I'm trying to figure this stuff out, and I'm paying attention, I'm focusing. I'm 18, 20 cycles per second in the beta brainwave state. But then I get bored. Ugh, this class, and the teacher is just droning on and on, and I just start staring out the window. Well, I just floated and drifted away in my conscious awareness. I've altered my state of consciousness, actually, and moved down into the alpha brainwave state. Now I'm firing about 12 cycles per second. I'm in that daydreamy state, thinking about the weekend and how much fun I'm going to have with my friends, or thinking about the vacation my family took, last year. I've drifted away. The teacher's still talking, but I'm not consciously aware of what's going on in the room. Maybe you've been in a meeting somewhere at work or something, or you've driven somewhere. You ever had that experience of driving? You remember that, last minute or two, you missed your exit, or you all of a sudden you're at the store, you're at work, you're at home, you're at the you're in your garage. And you don't remember driving the last, 8 or 9 blocks. Well, it's because your conscious mind drifted off and you started thinking about something else. The meeting next week that you're going to run, the project that's due on Friday, the new PowerPoint presentation you got to get going, the conference that's next week, picking up the kids from school, whatever the thing is. You start thinking about something else, and your subconscious mind took over driving. You know how to drive. You know how to drive home. You know how to drive to work. You know how to drive to the store because if you've lived there for some years, you've done it maybe hundreds, if not thousands, of times. So you know how to tie your shoes. You know how to walk down the street. You know how to drive the car. So your subconscious mind takes that over. Your conscious mind floats and drifts away. We do this multiple times a day. Let's say I'm back in high school math class and my mind's drifted away. I'm just staring out the window, watching the leaves blow in the wind, thinking about, my romantic other, and we're going to go to the movies on Friday. And I'm thinking about that, and all of a sudden my eyes start getting heavy and my head starts lying down. I start getting right there. Well, I'm not really asleep, but I'm not really awake either. Kind of in that haziness. When you get to sleep in on a Saturday morning, that haziness of just that weird daydreamy state, floaty state. Well, now I'm in the theta brainwave state. I'm firing about 6 cycles per second. In a minute, I might actually be asleep in delta, 1 half cycle per second. But instead, the teacher sees me, says, "Hey, Craig, why don't you come up here and do the problem on the board?" And so I kind of startled myself. I'm looking around, everybody's staring at me. I'm embarrassed. I don't know how to do the problem on board. I'm looking at that equation, doesn't look familiar because I haven't been paying attention. And now I'm stressed. I'm firing about 30 cycles per second. And in just that math class, over the last, 10 minutes of that math class, I've altered my state of consciousness 3 or 4 times. That's just a natural state of brain that we go in and out of all day long. Watching TV puts you in the alpha brainwave state, being bored watching your TV, being bored at that meeting at work, driving down the street, riding the train, riding the subway, riding, whatever. We move in and out of these various brainwave states all day long. You cannot be in the beta brainwave state 16, 17 hours a day. It just, that's not the way the brain works. You at least move into the alpha theta brainwave states at least twice a day, falling asleep and waking up. That alpha theta delta brainwave state is what's known as the hypnagogic trance state. It's a fancy term to impress your family and friends at parties. Moving down in that alpha brainwave state, a natural state of mind, you're moving to hypnosis. Now, hypnosis has gone, unfortunately, because of movies and TV shows, and this is how we're going to hypnotize Jason Bourne or James Bond to assassinate the Prime Minister. It's not the way it works. You can't force anybody to do anything they don't want to do. That's why something, hypnotherapy is really famous for helping people to quit smoking. That's not 100% guarantee, because if you don't want to quit smoking, you're not going to quit smoking. If somebody's, wife or husband makes the appointment, okay, I'm tired of you smoking and the health implications that are coming down the line, the cost of it, and man, it just stinks all the time. You're quitting smoking. I made an appointment for you Thursday at 2 o'clock. You're quitting smoking. You're going to hypnotherapy. Well, yeah, they're probably going to show up for hypnotherapy to keep peace in the house. But I've had people say, "Oh, I don't want to quit smoking. So I'm just going to tell my wife that it didn't work. I can't even be hypnotized, and I'm going to smoke in the garage." Paid money, but had no intention of quitting smoking. I couldn't make them because they didn't want to. Just like I can't make you rob a bank, or I can't, hypnotize my way into the United Nations and create world peace, or get Elon Musk to write me a $1 billion check. The reason I don't have a $1 billion check from Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos or whoever is because they don't want to write me one. So you can't make people do things they don't want to do. So with those shows, whether you saw it on TV or a YouTube clip or a comedy club or in Las Vegas, people are up on stage dancing like Michael Jackson and singing like Elvis Presley and quacking like ducks and whatever the thing is, right? Pretending to ride a roller coaster. Everybody gets up on the stage, volunteered to get up there. And who's that person going to pick? That hypnotist comes out. Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. We're going to have a great night of a lot of fun. Who wants to get up on stage and have a great time? Are they going to pick the introvert who's in the back of the room, hiding in the shadows, sinking down in their chair, trying not to be seen? Or are they picking the extrovert who got there early to sit in the front row and standing up saying, pick me, pick me? One of them is going to do a better show. And they bring up, if you ever notice, they bring up about 12, 14, 15 people because they know two or three of them are going to be excused because they have them sit in chairs and they do a process at the beginning. And the hypnotist is looking for body language. They're an expert at this. And they're looking for facial cues. Maybe facial muscles are droopy or their jaw is relaxing, or maybe their eyes are darting around if they're closed. Maybe they even pick up their arm and see if it's limp. And if it's not, if they see they're stressed because there's 100 people with their phones out videotaping this silliness, big lights down, maybe there's even cameras around. They're going to be stressed. They have stage fright. They don't want to do it anymore. They've changed their minds. They're going to be excused from the stage. It happens pretty much every show because you can't make somebody do anything they don't want to do. There's probably people listening to this who say, well, I tried to be hypnotized once and it didn't work. So I can't be hypnotized. Well, no, you couldn't, you didn't want to be hypnotized in that particular situation. Now, universities and academics, they love their research and their studies about hypnosis and consciousness and all that kind of thing. They say, oh, 20% of the people can't be hypnotized. No, 20% of the people can't be hypnotized with you in that research situation. It's a brainwave state. They couldn't be hypnotized with you because they felt uncomfortable with that person, felt uncomfortable in the lab or the person's office, felt uncomfortable with the Zoom call. Maybe consciously or unconsciously, they weren't ready for the healing. And so they put the brakes on it. Why? Because they have control. You can't take control away from anybody in that instant. Those persons say, no, I'm not doing this.
So can everybody be hypnotized given all the factors being right?
Yeah, you're already hypnotized. And I don't mean to say that in a conspiratorial way, but a lot of people come to sessions with me and say, I'm anxious. I don't even know why. My nervous system is so exhausted because I'm just always anxious. I'm always afraid. I'm always angry. I'm resentful at everybody and everything. Why? I don't know. Yeah, because you're hypnotized. Now, it doesn't mean like it's control or Big Brother is out there doing this. So it's like you have trained yourself through various situations, circumstances, and events in your life to turn on that warning system of the fight or flight. You've hypnotized yourself to do that. You've hypnotized yourself to walk down the street. And I'm using this maybe kind of loosely, but you don't have to think about getting up and walking to go get a glass of water or getting up to walk to the car to and then drive. These things, to a certain extent, you've hypnotized yourself. You hypnotize yourself, and it's not, again, a control thing because you will align with certain philosophies of awareness of the world. And most noticeably, not to turn this into a political thing, but I think people really understand this, is that if you're more left-leaning, you're not going to be influenced by the right-leaning media. If you are right-leaning, you will not be influenced by the left-leaning media. Yet if you're right-leaning, you will be influenced by right-leaning media. You will be, if you're left-leaning, you'll be influenced by left-leaning media. It's influence because you agree with what th they're saying. So now right-leaning media can't influence left-leaning people because left-leaning people are in control. So there is influence there, but you have to kind of lean into it and agree to a certain extent with it. And so, but that's also with life. And somebody who, smokes cigarettes has hypnotized themselves to puke it up this cigarette, which has no redeeming value whatsoever and is actually quite harmful. Pick up a suck in these cancerous chemicals into their lungs whenever they're stressed and work is a pain. They've hypnotized themselves to do that. That makes no logical sense. Nobody smoking cigarettes can logically give you an explanation of why they do that. They've hypnotized themselves to do that.
Can we talk about our audience right now? They've lived, full, long lives. Some of their regrets include, marriages that ended, careers they left, opportunities they didn't take, dreams they postponed. Those feelings are, the stories are so powerful decades later. Is that like a self-hypnosis over the decades or?
And I don't want to get stuck on like, are we hypnotizing ourselves and is it fake or trickery? Because it gives us a sense of, have you hypnotized yourself into the regret of, doing this and not that? And I don't want to give it the impression that you've been tricked or it's fakery. It's just that we are programming ourselves with computer code to walk down the street, to play the piano, to ride a bike, to get anxious when we see that person at work. And so this is just the way the human being operates, yet we have control over that. That person at work doesn't have to set off the warning signals. Now, it doesn't make everything rainbows and unicorns, but I get it. Yeah, I can make you a list of regrets and disappointments and frustrations of life. I think that's, just part of the human experience. Is it affecting you to the point where life is uncomfortable and even unpleasant? That you can take control of. That you turned left instead of turning right. That you got married instead of going after the master's degree. That you moved to this city instead of that city. Yeah, that's a problem. That doesn't mean it was the right decision or the wrong decision. But if you're feeling upset about it and it's hindering life, and you moving forward because it's placing the brakes on just the, enjoying life and moving forward, then that's a problem. And there needs to be some resolution to that. And you're allowed to do that. You're the one who's doing it. And it doesn't mean it was fair that you didn't get to go to do your master's degree. It's not fair that you didn't get to do that internship. It's not fair that the marriage broke up. It's not fair that kids don't call you or whatever the thing is. It's not fair. But it doesn't mean you have to live in the hurt and the pain of it. That is up to you. That is your control in a situation that may seem way out of control. You can return to resiliency and resourcefulness, necessarily happiness and joy, because it may not be a very happy or joyful situation. But it doesn't mean you have to remain in anxiousness or overwhelm or worry or fear.
So when one of those women says, "Oh, I'm too old to change. It's too late now," is there any truth in that, or have you blown that up the water
Have they
for
not
her?
hypnotized themselves into that? Because literally, is that not out every article that you read about growing older? Is it not say keep changing, keep growing? Because our brains continue to grow up until the last breath. Good Lord, has anybody seen Dick Van Dyke lately? I mean, the man turned 100. Mel Brooks just turned 100. Betty White was 100, and they were operating. Dick Van Dyke's out there singing and dancing and doing all sorts of things. And that's not everybody's experience, but as you continue to learn and to grow, again, learn a language, do a crossword, do something, because the brain continues to form neural pathways, neurons that fire all at the same time will connect together. And that's how you get good at something, martial arts or dance or the piano or learning to walk as a kid. So continue to learn. But if you have this mindset of I'm too old to learn anything, have you not been hypnotized to do that? Same with like I can't be hypnotized. Have you not hypnotized yourself not to be hypnotized? And I know we're getting like, jumbled up in the language of it, But and that's the frustration of the word hypnosis. And hypnosis is a really fascinating term. Back in the early 1800s, like the 1820s, there was a doctor, Dr. James Esdale. He was a surgeon in India. And back then, not just in India, but all over the world, there wasn't fancy hospitals or fancy anesthesia. If you're having your leg amputated, you're biting down on a stick, or you're, blow the head to knock you unconscious. Well, he's in India and he learns this trance state. He learned how to put people in a deep, deep, deep trance state. So far under into trance, it looked like they're in a coma. Then he could do amputations. He could cut people open and take out tumors and sew them back up. He could deal with, injuries and war wounds and all that kind of stuff. Goes back to England, takes this technique with him, starts join other people. Look, I can do this trance state with people. It takes him an hour to get people in this trance state, but then he could do operations without anesthesia. Other doctor, Dr. James Bard, starts using this technique, wanting a word to describe it to his colleagues and to write about it. He decides to name this coma-like state after the Greek god of sleep. The Greek god of sleep is hypnos. So he decided to name it hypnosis. And since then, since the, this modern era, and that's kind of the start of the modern era of this altered state of consciousness of hypnosis. I'm sure it's been used since the early days of Greece and Egypt and their healing temples and the mystery schools and all that kind of stuff. Certainly mesmerism in the 1600s or was it 1700s. Well, this more modern era of hypnosis started maybe in the early to mid 1800s. And it's just named after the Greek god of sleep. And it's grown to encompass these altered states of consciousness of the alpha theta brainwave state, where we can be influenced to create change. Good change or bad change. That's up to you. But if you're telling yourself that you are unable to change, have you not hypnotized yourself? That came from somewhere. Something influenced you to think that you cannot change. And if you refuse and put on the brakes and say, absolutely not, I will not go to that class. I will not learn how to play chess. I will not learn that language because I cannot change. Yeah, you've hypnotized yourself. You can do it. Good for you.
Okay, that might have answered another question I wanted to ask you, whether or not there are certain issues, shall we say, that respond particularly well to hypnotherapy, or is it all in the person holding whatever belief?
Really good question. And it's really, what is it you want to work on? And people generally, when they're coming to a hypnotherapist, they're usually at a point where they are ready for change. They may not even know what the change is they need to create, but they're at a point where the subconscious mind has said, it's too heavy. Talk therapy did not work. EDMR did not work. Whatever the thing is that we maybe you've been doing for years hasn't worked. That's not to say, please go to talk therapy. I think it's very helpful, very healing. But hypnotherapy is at the bottom of the list. Hypnotherapy is not on the top of anybody's list. And yet the research shows time and time again the extraordinariness of tapping into the power of your subconscious mind. It's the placebo effect. We know mind will heal the body. Research, like pharmaceutical companies, literally have to account for their accidental influence of people healing themselves. That's why they have to have the control group and the sugar pill. And there's extraordinary stories, anecdotal stories as well as research that shows mind heals the body. But also, for every up, there's a down, for every right, there's a left. Mind can also, as we know, stress. Can create physical issues. Irritable bowel syndrome, IBS, is directly related to hypervigilance, stress, and anxiety.
How about things that are related to the brain? And I'm thinking of, I guess, Parkinson's or dementia, those sorts of things.
I don't know that there's any research out there that has shown hypnotherapy being able to improve brain degeneration, like, you might see in Alzheimer's or dementia. Certainly, there's research out there that showed in Parkinson's that they were able to trick the brain into creating more dopamine through the placebo. And so it's possible, you know. The human being is remarkable. Here's a great example of this is a multiple personality disorder. Now it's called dissociative personality disorder, but just, you know, I'm in the habit of calling it multiple personality disorder. That's a real thing. That's a really extraordinary, unfortunate mental illness that about 97% of the people with multiple personality disorder have gone through extraordinarily extreme abuse and trauma as when they were children. And what the researchers think, and the experts in this think, is that the mind will split into several personalities to help handle the trauma and the hurt and the pain. They're the same bodies and brains that you and I have. Yes, they have extraordinarily extreme mental illness. But in terms of how the body works and our cells and our DNA and our genetics work, it's exactly the same. So part of this, tapping into the power of subconscious mind is how can we affect that superhero level kind of change, that extraordinary level of change, you know, and how can we get that to a point where we can tap into the healing power of everybody on that kind of superhero level. And then that's where, you know, then I think the next, hopefully decade or so of mind, of subconscious mind, you know, goes. Like, how can we tap into the superhero level of, oh, I'm going out tonight. I want to change eye color, you know, and be able to do, you know, this scar really stinks. I gotta hit my appendix out, you know, and that's the thing, you know, if I wake up in the morning and I have abdominal pain, don't take me to a hypnotherapist. Take me to the doctor. You know, my appendix is about to burst. If I'm in a car accident, don't take me to a hypnotherapist. But after the surgery, or before the surgery, after the surgery, after the cast on the leg, yeah, take me to hypnotherapy. So I'll accelerate that healing. That's been proven by Harvard. You know, so it's pretty extraordinary. Again, it's not that I'm doing it or that hypnotherapy is doing it. You are doing it. You're doing it.
When we started messaging about you coming on, I thought, good, this would be a really good opportunity to blow a few myths out of the water.
Yeah.
I want you to be able to give our listeners hope, and I really feel you've done that. But listening to you is like the power of the brain
Yeah.
is incredible, unbelievable, and all those words.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's 8 billion of us on the planet, and it's not one size fits all, you know. And so, because of the experiences we've gone through in life, maybe just in the last few months, maybe 60 years ago, these are all influencing us, oftentimes unconsciously. We've hypnotized ourselves, again, not on purpose, maybe through trauma and tragedy. But we hypnotize ourselves to view the world in a certain way. You're the one who did that. Again, it's not to blame you or say it's your fault. It's not. It's not to blame the victim or anything, but it shows you the power. It's like, well, if you did it once, why can't you do it again? And if you did it as a child, imagine what you can do with the wisdom and the knowledge and the understanding of an adult, you know, with full awareness of like, yes, I'm going to change. I'm going to heal. I'm going to create my best life. And that doesn't mean everything's rainbows and unicorns all the time. But imagine coming to the challenges of life with more resiliency and resourcefulness, you know, than automatic reactions that you've been doing since you were a teenager, you know.
Okay, so Craig Meriwether only has so many hours in his day. if someone listening today is curious, what qualifications should they be looking for in a
Oh.
hypnotherapist?
That is an extraordinarily great question. Thank you for bringing that up. Please, 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 whoever you're researching or talking with, most every hypnotherapist offers some sort of consultation call, 20-minute, half-an-hour consultation call, probably email back and forth. Please understand their training because a lot of training is pretty flimsy. There, in most states, in the United States, I don't know about other countries and things, but in the United States, most states do not have any sort of licensing or certification. So you can take like a 20-hour video course and call yourself a hypnotherapist. There's a something happening. I live in Arizona. There's something happening in Phoenix coming up. A 3-day course, 8 hours a day. So, and that's probably a lot of chit chat and going back and forth. So probably just about 20 hours of training. And they say you can call yourself a certified hypnotherapist. That's scary to me. That's half a week at the Hypnotherapy Academy of America. That's one of the premier educational institutes in the world. People, when I was there some years ago, there's people from Europe, there's people from South America. They were saying, just out of chit chat, so yeah, there was somebody from Iran that was trying to get in, they couldn't get a visa. There's someone from Russia that's trying to get in, they couldn't get a visa. And it's not to, flex or pump myself up or pat myself on the back, but please understand the person if you're interested in this work, what their education is. If their website, if they don't tell you, I brag about my education. I brag that I have 500 hours plus, over a decade or so, another 200 hours of continuing education, of courses and conferences and workshops and things.
Boy, my eyes wandered. That's exact. I'm on your website on my other monitor here, and yeah.
And I brag about that for a reason, because I want you to know that I know what I'm doing. And of course, there's other people in the world who know what they're doing, but there are oftentimes people and they just tell you their story. And it's like, okay, I guess that's fine. And maybe that's, I don't know why people t have to tell you their life story in order to like, I don't know. But if they don't tell you their education, that's a huge red flag. Because like it's that Harvard thing. Someone who went to Harvard will let you know they went to Harvard. Why? Because it's awesome. Yale, Stanford, Oxford, Cambridge, whatever, MIT. They'll let you know. It's obnoxious. It's annoying. They tell you that because they're proud of it, because it's so prestigious to go to Harvard or Yale or Stanford or Oxford or whatever. Same with me. I tell people I went to the Hypnotherapy Academy of America. If people aren't telling you what their education is, that's a huge red flag. And at the very least, ask them. But most often, it's video training of 20 to 30 hours, and they call themselves a hypnotherapist. And,
So get that information and then go do your due diligence before you ever go in and see them.
Because I and this it's a head scratcher on why states don't have any sort of licensing. I mean, a massage therapist needs licensing from the state. Obviously, a psychotherapist or a psychiatrist, a doctor is going to be licensed and certified by the state. Auto mechanic. I mean, a friend of mine's an auto mechanic. He has, like, every few years, he has to take this 5-hour test for the state to fix your car. But a hypnotherapist, for some strange reason, I would think the American Psychological Association would, I don't know, do something about that, lobby, because it's to me, it's a little frightening because, okay, quit smoking. Okay, fine. Confidence to do the speech at the big conference next month. Okay, your golf game. All right. But sometimes the things come up that are pretty intense.
I was
And
going to ask you
didn't
if
know it was there,
just as you can help people do miraculous things or seemingly miraculous things, can a poorly trained hypnotherapist do as much damage?
Oh, I don't know about damage, but it's like a poorly trained psychotherapist. I wouldn't go so far as like a poorly trained surgeon or anything like that, but I mean, I would just think to a certain point that's not going to work and you'll be frustrated and it's like, well, even this doesn't work. Poorly trained hypnotherapist just, probably won't help you quit smoking, It's not going to get you down on heroin, you know what I mean? And that's a broad kind of thing. But a poorly trained hypnotherapist isn't going to get you on hard drugs if you're trying to quit smoking, you know what I mean? So, having said that, it's like be careful, if there's some maliciousness to it, then yeah, that's a problem because it's influence, and it's the used car salesman thing, or that whole thing we've probably seen it in movies and TV shows. Oh, you got to mirror the person's body language and mirror their language and mirror their tone. The reason they say that, when you're selling somebody something or trying to influence somebody, mirror how they're sitting, mirror their tone, mirror how their language, use the same words back. The reason they say that is because it works. Commercials know that, politicians know that, the news knows that. But again, it's sort of like, I can't sell you a car if you're not interested in buying a car. Right. But if you're interested in buying a car and you're interested in buying a sports car, okay, now we got something. And so, same with like that news example. The right-leaning news is not going to influence a left-leaning person, but that will influence a right-leaning person because they're more apt to understand the language and the philosophies, if you will, that they're expounding. And so that's why that works. And they know that,
Yeah.
And same with social media, as people scroll. You may be talking to a friend and say, "Oh my God, did you see that news about the thing?" They're like, "No." Why? Because their algorithm is different. They've trained their algorithm to look for other stuff and present it to you. And I mean, it could be the same story, even. The facts are A, B, and C, but how it's presented to you, as we've seen, can be quite different. And so, and that's just due to your algorithm. You're training your algorithm on your social media to present to you the world in a certain way. So, are we not also doing that with our subconscious minds? So, in a sense, you're training your algorithm of your social media. You're hypnotizing your social media to think and give you information a certain way. So, are you not doing that with your subconscious mind? And why not do that on purpose?
Okay, I want to wrap on a positive note. If you could leave boomer women with one message about change after 60, what would it be?
Change after 60. What you practice, you get better at. Of course, that happens when you're 10 years old and 26 years old and all that. But what you practice, you get better at. And that's great if you want to learn the piano or you want to learn golf. Or you want to learn dance, or you want to go to that Tai Chi class, want to learn the language, the new language. What you practice, you get better at. What if you're practicing anxiety, though? What if you're practicing anger or resentment about life? Because of the marriage, because of the, paths not taken. Are you not wiring your brain to feel and see the world in a certain way? So, again, take control of that. Otherwise, it's going to be automatic and you will be influenced by social media and TV in a certain way. So when you take control of it, and that may mean practicing, and it may seem silly to say, oh yeah, well, you need to practice happiness, or you need to practice joy, or you need to practice peace of mind and body. Yeah, but neurons that fire together wire together. So imagine practicing peace of mind and body while feeling happy. Is that not going to get stronger? You're going to get better. You're going to get a black belt, not in Taekwondo, but a black belt in happiness and joy and peace and confidence. You can do it. It's just, what do you want to spend your time on? And it may be on martial arts and learning to do watercolor and fine. But and if you want to learn happiness, you can learn that too.
Where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
On the World Wide Web, you can go to releasethepast.com and I'll send you that link. It'll lead you to craigmeriwether.com, but Meriwether has a lot of different spellings to it. And I spell it kind of an odd way. So releasethepast.com is the easiest to remember. And yeah, if you want a consultation call or just email or text or whatever is the best way to communicate, I'm happy to talk with you.
Okay, what is Depression 180?
That is
You
a
wrote a
book
book.
I wrote. Yeah, that was a book I wrote about 15 years ago. I struggled a lot with anxiety and depression growing up as a teenager. It's a whole different story. So really quickly, that's what got me into hypnotherapy. But long story around that 40-year journey, sort of from teenage years of struggling with depression and anxiety to talking with you today. But I did a lot of work on myself, and what I found in the kind of late 2000s, I had a lot of techniques and tools and information about depression, and wanting to help change the world. And I joined a mastermind group who also wanted to find their way of changing the world. And, writing a book seemed to be the best way. So I wrote Depression 180. It came out as a program with videos and recordings because that's the way you did things back in the day. But just recently, actually, I put it up on Amazon, kind of re-released it. It kind of went out of print, if you will, because I focused on becoming a hypnotherapist. And just because it's so easy now to get books up on Amazon, I put it up on Amazon. So that's what that book's all about. It's just techniques and tools. It's not really my story. It's more of a workbook, if you will, because in and of itself, depression isn't one thing. Depression isn't the illness. Depression is a symptom. Depression may be the symptom of side effects of a medication, including antidepressants. It may be due to a brain injury, traumatic brain injury, car accident, or concussion of a football player. Maybe because of grief. Maybe because of trauma 60 years ago. And so it can't be a one size fits all solution. And so what this book does is kind of compile a lot of the different tools and techniques of helping you deal with and resolve the issues around depression.
You also have a free ebook.
Yes. So that, yeah, if you just go to a website, and I'll give you the links, and you can hand them out as you see fit. But if you go to my website, releasethepast.com, you'll see up in the menu free ebook or something like that. It's called The Power, The Healing, The Power of Your Beliefs. And it starts off with that the information about multiple personality disorder, and talks about mind and healing. And it's just a cool little book I wrote that I put up on Amazon. But you can have it if you're interested. And there's nothing to sign up for. Just go to the webpage and download it as a PDF, and you can have it.
All right. And you're on social.
I sort of kind of not really.
Okay.
I've kind of. Bought my social media time. But yeah, I have stuff on social media. I don't spend too much time on there anymore. I've kind of and that's a whole nother there's another 2 hour conversation about social media and the bots and the algorithms and the who's running the show nowadays. And I've gotten very frustrated and disillusioned with all of it, so I don't spend too much time there. So the best way is just the website. I'll occasionally put up something on social media or a new video on YouTube, but it's mainly just the website.
Okay. Can I ask you a personal question before we
Absolutely,
close?
100%, yeah.
You're in Flagstaff, Arizona.
Yes.
Apparently, it's the world's first international dark sky city.
Yes.
Now, I was going to ask if you know what that is, but then I want to know too where your favorite go-to place is in Flagstaff. So I'm going to fly in. I'm a tourist. I don't want the touristy destination. I want your best kept secret.
Oh, good Lord. Okay. Well, the unfortunate thing is a lot of the cool places are the kind of little touristy things. Of course, the Grand Canyon is very nearby. One of the cool things, though, that we have is Lowell Observatory. Because Dr. Lowell is the person who, while in Flagstaff on his big telescope, discovered Pluto. So, one of the things we're famous for is discovering Pluto. And the Dark Sky City means that we have certain regulations, city-wide regulations, on keeping lights dim and low. So when you're driving down the street, yes, we have street lights, but they're kind of those weird orangey, not very bright street lights. And that's to so we can see the stars. And we're the first, I don't know. I don't know if we made that up or that where that came from, but one of
National Geographic.
oh, National Geographic. Okay. No, there you go. Yeah,
There,
you told
it
me
has
that.
to be true.
But yeah, let's see. And it is. I mean, there's lots of signs, and literally, you cannot just put a big, huge spotlight out there. Their city zoning and things will keep you from doing that because we want to see the stars. And Lowell Observatory is a great place, especially, of course, at night, to go and just see the wonders of this beautiful universe of ours. You'll have to give me. Yeah, I'll probably won't do it now. I'll probably email you something. But of course, the Grand Canyon. And there's all sorts of beautiful hikes and cafes and restaurants. But Route 66 plows right through town, if you will.
Okay.
That's the main road through town. That's how Flagstaff is built up, Route 66. Just celebrated our version, our part of the 100th anniversary of Route 66 is this year. There's
So when
no
I drive through in my 65 Corvair, I'm going to fit right in.
You're gonna fit right in, really. And people will, if you park downtown, people will stare at your car for a while. We have lots of car shows,
Oh, yeah.
car shows here. We just had one last week. But in terms of Flagstaff's a beautiful town, but it's an outdoor-y town. And so there's lots of great hiking, lots of great of Native American sites, Wapatki and other places to go to that are fun and extraordinary, just to see why people were living 1,000 years ago in the area. So I'll think about it, and actually I'll email you some cafes and restaurants and things. But yeah,
Oh, that's
it's fun.
great.
If you love the outdoors, Flagstaff's a great place to be.
Well, if you ever need a break from your hypnotherapy, you can work for the tourist bureau. Apparently,
Oh,
that
thank you.
sounds
Yeah,
great.
thank you. Yeah.
That's great. Okay, your website link is in the show notes,
Okay.
and a whole bunch of links are going to be on your page at our website.
Okay.
Listeners, if today's conversation made you stop and think, I'd love to hear from you. Have you ever changed a belief about yourself that you'd carried for years? Share your thoughts in the comments because I read everyone and I'm going to send them to Craig as well. If you know someone who's been telling themselves it's too late for me, share this episode with them. Sometimes one conversation arrives at exactly the right time. If you're enjoying these conversations about creating your own next chapter after 60, be sure to follow the Boomer Woman's podcast so you don't miss future episodes. There's another inspiring conversation waiting for you next week. Craig Merriweather, thank you for being my guest today.
Oh,
Thank
thank
you
you. Thank
for.
you for I appreciate you giving me the time. I know I can go off on tangents, and this is so fascinating, consciousness and mind and healing. So I appreciate you being welcoming to the conversation and information. And yeah, I'd love maybe come back at some point and talk some more.
Yeah. I appreciate the fact that you took it right down to basics, whether it's the subconscious or hypnotherapy, hypnosis, whatever it is. So that's great. I really appreciate it. And as you pointed out several times, none of this comes with an age limit. So it's good right till the end. Okay. Have a great rest of week.
Thank you. Thank you, Agnes.